That's true. I am Jim Rome. We start hour number two. We are coming to you live from the Quicken Loan Studios. You want to apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently with Quicken Loans. Nice to have you here. Coming up in about 35 minutes, I've got the manager of the Houston Astros, A.J. Hinch. They're coming off an amazing road trip and are playing great baseball right now. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. I took last week off. Had a great first hour back. Nice to be with you. All right, we spent the first hour talking about the NBA and, of course, the U.S. Open. Joining us now to talk more about that tourney is Rex number 7, a Golf Channel senior writer. He is all over the event. Rex Hoggard is my guest. Rex, good morning. Good to have you back. How are you, Rex?
Good, Jim. How are you?
Good, bud. Good. Great to have you on. Let me first start with by saying yesterday, going into the final round, how confident, Rex, were you that no matter what everybody else did, it was going to come down to Brooks Koepka and Dustin Johnson?
Yeah, no disrespect to anyone else in the field. And, you know, it is the U.S. Open and things can get a little crazy. But you always knew it was going to come down to those two. I mean, they just had the look. They've won the last two U.S. Opens. They train together in South Florida. I mean, they compete at everything they do. And they're built for this championship. I mean, they just have resilience that you don't see in other players.
Rex Hoggard joining us. All right, so mention that relationship. You actually wrote a piece breaking it down and the rivalry between the two of them at the Joey D Golf Training Center. There's a story from a while back where Brooks mentioned that he could become world number one. What did Dustin make of that when Brooks said that?
Well, it gives you a snapshot into their relationship. And, you know, you can take it a step further. They both trained together. They worked out together Sunday morning before they set out at the U.S. Open on a Sunday in the same group together. So you get an idea how close they are. But it was a great exchange. It was a couple weeks ago, and Brooks was talking about he felt like, you know, I can be number one in the world again. And at the time, he was number 11. And DJ turns to him, and he goes, add a one to that, and you've got it right. You know, just kind of giving him the business. And Brooks shoots back and says, you know what, you can come and hang my banner for me, because they hang banners in the Joey D Center for victories and when guys get to world number one. And Dustin's comment was, not while I'm alive, I won't. And it was such a great exchange. It gives you some insight into this relationship. It's a great friendship, but beyond that, it's a great rivalry. Like I said, they compete at anything, paddleboarding, warming up on the stationary bike, working out, you name it, they compete against each other.
Rex Hoggard joining us. Rex, you did a good job of laying that out, but can you give me even more insight? For instance, how would you describe Koepka to somebody who's never met him?
I mean, he's a true athlete. And the funny thing is he had a wrist injury at the end of last year. And I think if you look at the kind of person he was, and Claude Harmon, the swing coach, said it best, he wasn't a golf nerd. He wasn't one of those guys like Rory McIlroy, for example, who spent the week before the U.S. Open up at Long Island because he wanted to play all those great golf courses up there. That's not Brooks. He doesn't watch golf on TV. He doesn't play golf for fun. It's a job for him. But when he had to miss 4 months with the wrist injury, you have an uncertain future at that point. He came back and fell in love with the game, and he got motivated again. And he's always been this great specimen. You know, he's the prototype of the modern professional. He and DJ both are. But now he seems to have a passion that I don't think he had before the injury, to be quite frank with you.
I mean, you look at him, Rex. Physically, you can see what this guy's all about. But there was a point on Friday where he was 7 over, and it looked like he might miss the cut. And then he birdies 6 of his final 11 holes on Friday. He comes all the way back. So physically, you can look at this guy and you see the way he's put together. But what does this tell you about his mental toughness, the way he battled back when it looked like he might miss the cut?
They used the quote a lot last week, said he's the most confident player out there. And when you say something like that, it's going to raise some eyebrows, right? I mean, it's testosterone, it's locker room talk. But he means it. I talked to him on Friday. He ended up getting it back. He finished with a 5 over par, on Thursday. And he wasn't bothered by it because he knew what it takes to win this championship. He knew how difficult it was going to be. And he had 3 more days to make up ground. And even going into the final round, he didn't even have a great Saturday, although not many players had a great Saturday. And he just wasn't rattled by it. And everyone looks at how far he hits the ball, and that's great. Everyone wants to talk about his length and his power, but I think it's his mind that's his most important aspect, because he simply doesn't get bothered by situations like other players.
Well, so you mentioned Saturday. I'll go back to that in a minute. But when he won at Erin Hills, the knock was it was just too easy. And even though he was a major champion, there's been this tendency to overlook him. How much does yesterday's win change all of that?
I don't want to say it validates him, because that's not fair. He was a major champion, but certainly it takes him to a whole new level. And you could see it in his eyes. Someone was talking with him and said that there's been, I'm going to get this wrong, but let's say 280 major champions in the history of golf, but only 80 two-time major champions. And Brooks's eyes lit up, and he kind of smiled at that, thinking how much of a unique category it puts him in. And I think the test has something to do with it. You mentioned, I mean, Aaron Hills, he finished at 16 under. There were a lot of people who didn't think that was a proper U.S. Open. No one's going to say this about this U.S. Open. This was a demanding, grueling, difficult, impossible, whatever word you want to use, it was that kind of test.
We're talking to Rex Hoggard. All right, Rex, so going back to Saturday, the expectation going in was this was going to be a more punitive U.S. Open than some of the recent ones, and there's been a pretty regular custom at the Open that the players will complain about the setup, but the complaints were even louder than usual after Saturday's round. So in your opinion, how fair were those complaints, and did the USGA lose the course on Saturday?
They did, and look, players complain. It's what we do. You know, it's taxes, it's death, it's all the things that we expect. And PGA Tour players are going to complain about golf course setup. But this was completely well-founded. I mean, on Saturday, they simply tucked some pins in some positions, given the conditions that they had and how difficult and fast the golf course was getting. And on this, Mike Davis, the CEO of the USGA, is the ultimate voice. He said it. They got it wrong, which is amazing to me, because back in 2004, they got it wrong, and Mike had promised that this wasn't going to happen again. And here we are 14 years later, and we're having the exact same conversations. It's really baffling to me.
Rex Hoggard, oh, it happened again, all right. All right, Rex, so let me ask you about Phil Mickelson. What did you think when you saw what he did on the 13th green?
I thought that my 14-year-old tried to do that a couple weeks ago when he and I were out playing, and I sat down and have a very stern conversation with him, and I couldn't believe it was happening. Because we asked a lot of players. No one thinks about doing that. I don't care if you're playing in a major championship or Jim, you and I are playing for a $2 Nassau. You're not going to do that. And it was just blown away. And I think that was part of the problem is no one had ever seen it before, and no one really knew how to react. And I still don't think that Phil has really given us an idea where his mind was at the time. I mean, did you just lose your mind and get mad about the golf course? Was it a calculated move to try to save yourself a couple strokes? It's hard for me to wrap my mind around.
Yeah, I mean, Rex, it is. It's really hard to wrap your mind around what happened. I mean, you just said it. You're not having this from your 14-year-old son, much less a 48-year-old Hall of Famer. But he kind of did let us know where his mind was at, right? I mean, what do you make of him saying after the fact that, oh, I knew exactly what I was doing. In fact, I did it on purpose.
Phil does a lot of things. His mind works so differently than mine. I could see him thinking in that situation, okay, it's going to be two strokes, but if I bat it closer to the hole, maybe I save myself a stroke instead of letting it roll down the hill and who knows what it's going to end up in. I just can't imagine he was that quick on the draw and that he hit the putt, realized he hit it too far. And if Phil doesn't run at anything, he runs at that putt. I mean, all of those things moving so quickly, I have a hard time believing that. He did say it. And I'll take him at his word, but, man, I mean, it happened so quickly. It's just amazing to me that if that's really how his mind works, then I even have, you know, more respect for him than I did before.
Yeah, he's the smartest guy ever, if that's how that works. I'm having a hard time believing that's how that went. But you're right. It's hard to come right out and say that that's not what he had in mind because I don't know. I'm not crawling around up there, but I'm having a hard time with it. Now, your Golf Channel colleague, Justin Leonard, made the point that Mickelson didn't use the rules, but rather he broke the rules. Is that how you see it?
I do, and that was a great assessment. And I guess I have a twofold issue with that. One, the rule needs to be changed, because had he just stopped the ball, he would have been DQ'd. But instead, in his own words, he tried to bat it closer to the hole, thinking he would make the next putt, and that's just a two-stroke penalty. There's a lot of silly rules in golf. That one qualified as one, and I've seen players before use the rules to their advantage. Take drops that give them better angles to the hole. Take drops because of immovable objects. Whatever the case may be, that we can understand. That, I think, is acceptable. This time, it just didn't seem to register because Justin was right. He actually broke the rule, and I think everyone has a hard time with the rule as it is.
All right, so if he broke the rule, should he have been DQ'd for that?
No, and I do think I will give the USGA credit on this front because they got it right. He did break the rule, but they applied it properly. Like I said, had he just stopped the ball, that would have been a DQ. But because he batted it closer to the hole, that's only a two-stroke penalty.
You know, I get it, Rex. I mean, I understand that those are the rules, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, hard for me to imagine, but I'm just going to ask the question. Could you see any scenario in the future where other players might do what Mickelson did on 13 and then point to the fact that he was not disqualified, so neither should they be?
I hope not, and I think that's the concern everyone has right now, and I'd like to think the USGA and the RNA, who does the rules in the rest of the world outside of the United States, are having meetings as we speak, trying to figure out how to keep this from happening, because that's a bad look for golf. And look, like I said, there's some silly rules, and that sometimes golf comes off not looking very good, but man, it's just that if you start having players doing that, thinking they're going to save themselves strokes, I mean, that is by definition cheating. No one wants to see that.
Rex Harder, my guest. All right, Rex, we're about a month and a day, in fact, from the first round at Carnoustie. I know it's early, but what thoughts do you have about the Open Championship and who the course might favor?
Well, I think when you look at that golf course, it's probably the hardest in the Open rotation, and we've seen it time and time again, the champions there. They don't have to trick it up. We won't be talking about green speeds or the golf course getting away from them there. But you have to look at the guys who are on form right now. I mean, certainly Dustin Johnson, the way he played last week, convincing four-stroke victory the week before. All of those things kind of factor in. You'd have to look at those two guys. But I actually think that, you know, we're going to see a European kind of get back in the mix. I would fully expect a guy like a Rory McIlroy, who's played well at the Open before. He's played well at Carnoustie. He knows how to play in the wind. I would think he would end up having a good week.
He is a Golf Channel senior writer, and he is Rex number 7. Rex Harder, my guest. Rex, so good to have you back. Really appreciate that. Let's be sure to do it again soon.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate having me on.
Thank you, Rex. Always great having you on this show. Rex Hoggard. All right, so again, the rule. You know, if you stop the ball, that's a DQ. But if you putt a moving ball, it's only a 2-stroke penalty. And again, that is the rule. But could you imagine somebody else trying to pull that going forward and saying, hey, wait a minute now. You can't DQ me. Hefty did it, and it worked for him. And I'll pose the question. Do you really accept what he said afterwards when he said, oh, no, I knew what I was doing. I've thought about doing it before, and finally now I just did it. Like he did the math on the fly, that the alternative would be worse. This thing rolls off the green. I'm probably still out there on Monday morning. However, if I putt the ball while it's moving in the midst of a dead sprint, it's only a couple of strokes. This email says, Jim, if someone asked what golfer would stop his ball from rolling during a major golf tournament, is there any doubt that most people would say Fat Phil Mickelson? Guy is such a bag. Mike in Buffalo. Wore bums using scaffolding to play Hollywood Squares. Now, anything that you said, Mike, during the email was erased with bum smack. I don't know. Hefty would be on the short list, sure. Sergio did hawk one right into the cup. Or just let it go.
I didn't spit. I just let it go down. But anyway.
Jeff in Raleigh tweets, it's my birthday, and I'll break rules if I want to. It's my party. Signed, Phil Mickelson. Again, notice I'm not golf purist who is so offended about this crime against all humanity about what he did. I'm not. That was pretty hilarious. And Phil being Phil, and not in a good way either. But I'm not offended by it. I'm offended by what he said after he did it.
You know, toughen up.
That is the richest thing ever. Him telling us to toughen up.
You know, toughen up.
After he did what he did. Yeah, because nothing's tougher than giving up and putting a moving ball. Like, I'm out, man. I'm good. I'm done. I'm fine. Never mind. It was like the worst day he's had in a long, long time. One of the worst days ever. And one of the worst holes ever. And that's how he reacted. But we need to toughen up. Like, come on, man. Hey, y'all, stop being punks. Why y'all gotta be so soft?
And if that's the way people took it, I apologize to them.
Again, if your apology begins with, if that's the way you took it, you're not apologizing for anything. You're not apologizing for what you did. You're apologizing for the position you're in. We've had that conversation a million times. Going back to last hour, Corey Gale is talking about the dueling piano The piano bar at the New York in Las Vegas is absolutely incredible. No sourpuss faces there, Jim. Janet would absolutely love it. Janet loves every dueling piano bar. I know she would. If they've got one of those there, she would love it. Again, that was the only sourpuss in the whole joint. Mom, who was trying to wreck the bachelorette party, but to their credit, they didn't care. They didn't care how upset she was. If that makes me, here's my non-apology. If me taking some old lady's request for Darius Rucker and doubling down to get the guy in the piano to stop playing it makes me a bad guy, then I'm the worst guy ever because I thought it was funny.
You know, toughen up.
I mean, toughen up, old lady. The thing is, you know why? I mean, context, know your room. That's pretty much what that piano bar is set up on. People throwing down drinks, and even more importantly, throwing down Jack to hear the songs they want to hear, and other drunk people paying more Jack to get them to stop playing the songs that those other people want to hear. That's kind of the way that room's all set up. But nobody told her that. She was the only one in the room who didn't get it. She's like, oh, I love this song. I just spent $40 to hear my favorite song. Yeah, well, I paid $60 to get them to stop. And it was funny. If it'll make you feel any better, Grandma, the same thing happened to me a couple times that night. It's all fine. Know your room. At Hitman Canadian tweets, I can relate with Phil. I thought about doing it before and finally just did it. Signed, Juice. Listen, Hawk. I'll get to you in a minute, Hawk. I've had a run of things that shouldn't be on the air. I don't know if that's because Dallas is gone and you're here now. I don't know what's going on. I know there's going to be a slight adjustment that you're running this stuff in now instead of Dallas, but there's certain things you don't need to run in here, Hawk. Namely, anything OJ related. Still ahead, AJ Hinch, Astros manager. That's coming up at 40 past. So you've got some topics. I can reset a few things for you if you need to. Otherwise, just get some. You know where to find me. Last day of the Hall of Fame voting. I've got that coming up too. Clones. Do you know where I go for energy products, sports nutrition, and vitamins? It's a no-brainer. GNC all day long. GNC. And with GNC, you now have auto-deliver. The GNC auto-deliver and save. You don't need to worry about missing a daily dose of your favorite vitamins and supplements. Once you set up your free subscription, GNC takes care of the rest. They ship your products automatically, free of charge, and with 10% off the order. Not to mention, you will never pay a membership fee, and you can change your order at any time. Quality shipped, wellness delivered. Visit GNC.com or a store near you to learn more. GNC.com, or walk right into a store and find out more. GNC.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
We all know Romy is a Hall of Famer.
But if Jim Rome is not a Radio Hall of Famer, then get rid of the Hall of Fame. Get rid of it.
Let's get Jim Rome into the National Radio Hall of Fame. Who is more deserving than Romy?
This guy belongs in the Hall of Fame.
He created his own language on the radio.
He is the best of the best of the best. He is the example by which all other people set the standard. He belongs in the Hall of Fame.
As somebody that has grown up in Southern California listening to Jim Rome all my life, I'm looking at that ballot. It should be automatic.
Unflappable. That's Jim. I have been listening to his show for the better part of 20 years.
I haven't ever heard him have a bad day. I haven't heard him say in 20 years.
Gonna be in Sacramento for a tour stop. The tickets can be sold out like that.
Now, how many people that do sports for a living right here on this medium on radio can pull that off?
Listening to Jim every day with his unique perspective.
Their own language.
And the sense of camaraderie we have here in the jungle kept me engaged as a sports fan.
What is it to be in the Hall of Fame? You have to be the best at what you do for a period of time. Jim Rome has been the best sports talk radio guy for decades.
Yeah, you better text
800 to 96,000
and vote at radiovote.com.
For me, yeah. It just needs to be 100%. If it's not, it's wrong.
Like a good old-fashioned Chicago election, vote early and vote often.
This is a dogfight. This is not the shoe-in you think it is. You got to vote.
That is so nice. That is really, really nice. All the guest hosts coming through last week. I want to thank everybody for doing it. You know, this show has never been an easy show to guest host because you clones are a different breed altogether. No matter who I put in here, you clones are quick to jump them because it's not what you're used to hearing. And then when you make this thing a simulcast as well, that makes it even more difficult. So I want to thank everybody who came in last week and did an amazing job. And most of all, thank you very much for the kind words. Because today is the last day. Today is the last day that you can cast your vote for the National Radio Hall of Fame. So what has felt like a month-long public radio pledge drive is now finally coming to a close tonight at midnight Eastern, 9 Pacific. We're still in this fight, but it is a fight. So you've got to give this thing everything you have up until midnight Eastern. If you have not done so already, it's not too late. Pull out your blowers. Send the numbers 800-296-000. 800 to 96,000. You can then double up and cast a vote with your email address through radiovote.com. Anything you do or you have a friend do, you know I appreciate. And just so you know, the polls do close tonight, but we do not get the official results until the end of the month. But I'm not going to wait to say this. I'm not going to wait until then to say this. No matter what happens, as we wrap up the campaign, I want to make sure that I express my appreciation right now. I want to say thank you right now. Thank you to everybody who has taken the time to vote for me. I mean, I can't say how much it means to me. I can't tell you how much I appreciate all the support that I've gotten the last couple of weeks. I was on with my guy, Bill Ryder, last Friday. I told him it's kind of like being at your own funeral, except you're not dead. I'm at my own funeral, and I get to hear all these people say all these nice things about me, but I'm still alive. So it's been a really amazing thing to get this kind of love this deep into my career. And a lot of my colleagues and people that we do business with stepped up in a huge way. From Dana White to Jamel Hill to Andy Staples to Kevin and Bean to the CBS Sports family, John Ireland, Elk, Jason Lockenfora, Jason Barrett, Tony Luffman, the fill-in hosts, Chris Mannix, Mark Melanson, Seth Wickersham, Cruz Pedregon, Ryan Garko, my man Gark was in, Jay Stu, Lyle Brandt, Roger Lodge, Bruce Feldman, Uriah Faber, the horse racing community, Freezing Cold Takes got in, the Sklar brothers, Ben Mesrick, everybody else that helped by voting and sharing and campaigning, thank you very, very much. And of course, clones, thank you all so much. You've gone to battle for me. You've gone to battle for the show. So whether I get in or not, I will never forget how many people went to the box for me and the program and the brand. I appreciate it more than you will ever know. This business can be ruthless at times, but the last couple of weeks have been nothing but love and support. And honestly, it feels better than any recognition that I could get anywhere else. We're down to our last several hours to vote. Let's finish this thing strong. Let's run our race out, and then we'll let the chips fall where they may. Nothing changes from here on out. This is not some off-ramp. This is not some sign-off. This is not some swan song, no matter what happens. In fact, what it is a reminder that this show means a lot to a lot of people, and these last 2 weeks have hammered that home for me. It's made me want to go harder than I've ever gone before. So once again, whether or not I'm paying off demands from the box of chaos, you can hold me to this. The jungle has never been more important to me than it is right now, and we're going to keep growing this thing bigger and bigger and bigger and better every single day, whether I get into the Hall of Fame or not. So last few hours, get at this thing. Hit it hard. Let's finish this thing strongly and run our race. And no matter what happens, thank you all very much. Thank you very, very much. All right, we'll take this break. When we come back, AJ Hinch, manager of the Astros, joins me next. If you're on hold, stay there. Phone lines are wide open. Third hour is also wide open. But we're talking Astros baseball next with AJ Hinch. First up, here's a sports update.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
AJ Hinch coming up momentarily. with potential game changers all over the board. CBS Sports Network's team of college basketball experts will break down everything you need to know about this year's NBA draft class. Do not miss the Inside College Basketball Draft Specials. They start tonight at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific, on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. We've got the best for that sort of thing. You do not want to miss that. And then I've got the worst for this sort of thing. At Prince Paul 3 tweets, DQ me. Already did, Jim. Dairy Queened myself with an Oreo cookie blizzard. Signed, Phil Mickelson.
You know, toughen up.
Golf shirt stretcher. See what else we got here. Jim, myself and another lady clone spent a few days collecting votes. Some at Delaware Park in Delaware and at some bars in Ocean City, Maryland. Jim, we got you 372 votes counted and maybe more unconfirmed. Good luck, Romy. You are the best. Diane in Maryland. War lady clones. Diane, you're amazing. That is so great. I mean, I was kind of talking about that very thing. You got to get creative with it. I appreciate your two votes, but she went next level. Diane, thank you so much. Honestly, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate that. 372 votes? That's a big swing. This says, Sir Jimothy, longtime listener since 2004. Just bought an Amazon Fire and watching you on CBS Sports. I cannot wait for the first televised smack-off. War still waiting for Carl Lewis to make it up to us. War Rachel in Houston, the original lady clone, making a smack-off appearance.
I'll make up for it now.
Son Julian, formerly in Edmonton. Calvin, how about the short version? If you got any Rachel, more than just her, she was the original, well, that's not true. Not the original lady clone, but one of the first smack-talking lady clones. One of the best to do it. I'm not sure what happened to Rachel, but she's been in the smack-off because of things like this.
Yes, clones. In little Joey's desperate attempt to reach puberty, he has super glued my back hair to his top lip, underarm, and somewhere in his SpongeBob SquarePants. Now you know what I've been up to, okay? Now back the hell up off me.
Rachel in Houston, back the hell up off her. Speaking of Houston, the Astros are playing amazing baseball right now. They're in first in the AL West. We're efforting their manager. We will find him. He's a very good friend of the program, A.J. Hinch. That's coming up momentarily. Take advantage of it now. Phone lines are open. 1-800-636-8686. Sometimes you wait because you think a guest is coming up, but you never know whether or not that guest is going to hit at that very moment. So take advantage of it. Use the phones. We hit the U.S. Open. I do want to talk some NBA, too. I want to double back to a first-hour topic, and I want to talk about Kawhi Leonard. And Adrian Wojnarowski had the report that he might be looking to go to L.A. next. He made it very clear on the show in hour number one that the Spurs do not want to trade him. Their preference, obviously, is not to move him. My thoughts are, if he's going to make it so they've got no choice, where they've done irreparable damage, that he does not want to be there, that they can't reconcile their differences, the Lakers should do whatever they can to make that deal. And I know there's some questions about Kawhi Leonard, obviously from a health standpoint. And maybe some people might even see him differently now based on the way this whole thing's played out. But if I'm the Lakers, this is exactly what they've been waiting for. Make that deal. More on that in a minute. But as promised, we're joined now by the manager of the Houston Astros. He led them to their first World Series title last season. He is a two-time Pac-10 Player of the Year at Stanford, a member of the Stanford Athletics Hall of Fame, very good friend of the program. Houston's 48-25. They're in first in the AL West. Houston hosts Tampa tonight, 8:10 p.m. Eastern. A.J. Hinch is my guest. A.J., it's great to have you back. Nice to have you on. A.J., how are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you doing?
Skip, I'm doing great. Thanks so much for joining me once again. You beat Kansas City yesterday 7-4. That was your 11th straight win. It caps off a perfect 10-0 road record or 10-0 road trip. Look, AJ, winning is tough enough. Going undefeated on a 10-game road trip is even tougher. How much pride do you take in that trip overall?
Oh, it was incredible. And we did it in a couple of different ways. I mean, we jumped out of a couple teams and blew them out. We also won some close games late. We won on a balk call in the ninth inning in Texas. Carlos Correa, Evan Gattis, Marwin Gonzalez were stars of the trip. Mix in a couple Verlander starts and a couple Cole starts. I mean, we've got a good thing going right now, and we just kind of take care of business. You know, the way our team is, the vibe around our team, just that feeling you get when you come in the clubhouse is that you're going to win. And I think that comes from a couple of years of winning in a row. Our guys have a pretty good way about them, and we're playing pretty good.
AJ Hinch joining us. You know, something I loved yesterday was when you trailed 4-3 in the eighth inning. I mean, it would have been very easy for guys to unconsciously at least say 9-1 is a real good road trip. Let's get on home. But they didn't. Correa homers to tie it. Right. Evan Gattis gives you that lead for good. What's that say about the competitive attitude of this team that it didn't give in that moment?
Oh, yeah. No, and it was like 100. I mean, the hottest place on earth felt like Kansas City, right. You know, yesterday at Kauffman Stadium. It was so hot. And our guys, and it is easy at the end of a long road, just the longest road trip of the year. And we'd already secured the series win. You know, you can concede. They got Kelvin Herrera down in the bullpen, so I think everybody was anticipating him coming in the ninth, and Correa just steps up, takes a fastball, hits it about 400 feet to left field, and says, "Wake up, boys, we have more games to play." And the dugout woke up. We put a couple good at bats together. We end up, you know, getting a pretty decent, comfortable win, and getting on a plane, having a happy flight, and getting home to Houston for a nice little homestand. So. I'm not going to complain with how we win. We can win early. We can win late. As long as at the end of the day we shake hands, we win.
Houston Astros manager AJ Hinch is my guest. You know, when you and I spoke in spring training, we talked about the experience of winning it all last season. Now that you're almost halfway through the season, does last season feel like ancient history, or does the experience of winning a world championship carry over and impact you and the players this year?
Well, we have to talk about it a lot, and we're not even done giving out our championship rings yet. We got a couple players that are going to come through Houston over the course of this month, and we're going to give their rings to them in a ceremony. So it's still out there, and our guys do a pretty good job of kind of letting it go. I mean, every now and then you got to pop on the ring and go do an event, or you got to talk to some people and talk about how it was. But we have a pretty focused group of players that love the taste of winning and want to do it again. So I rely on the players to sort of police the love affair with 2017. Our organization's done a good job of celebrating it enough, but not letting it get in the way. And honestly, I think our team, and it started in spring training with Verlander, taking exception to people talking about every other team but ours. Like, the championship trophy sits in our stadium, and we feel like we've got another good chance to make a good run, try to win the division and make another run at it. So there's still a little chip on our shoulder, which I love, that our guys, you know, want to be the best in baseball. And obviously it takes a lot of wins and it takes a long season, and we got a lot to do and all that stuff. But, you know, right now we're playing with a ton of confidence and we feel like the team to beat.
AJ Hinch is my guest. I'm glad you mentioned Verlander. In fact, you and I did talk about him in spring training as well. And we talked about the impact of having him in spring training and a full season versus him joining in the middle of this season. Now, he's got an ERA of 1.61. He's got a whip of 0.76. He's top four in the American League in at least six categories. What do you make of what he's done so far this season?
You know, it's funny. I get asked a lot of questions about JV, and rightfully so, but a lot of it is about his mentorship and his presence and his Hall of Fame credentials and what he brings to the clubhouse. And I like the guy that loves the little emoji, raises his hand like, "Hey, wait a minute, let's talk about his pitching. This is dominating every aspect of pitching. And what he does on the field is going to be more important than what he's doing behind the scenes." But he's the complete package of preparation to execution to wanting to help his teammates. I see him studying film of his teammates. He hangs with the boys. He's not, you know, sort of an elitist who's out on his own and doing his own program. He's intertwined with everybody. He does everything with everybody. And I love the way that he goes about it. And, you know, it's influential because if he's going to have that kind of attention span to his teammates and to the greater good of everybody, then people fall in line. I mean, I've seen, whether it's position player, Latin American, pitcher, young guy, old guy, you know, we all lean on JV for something, but me personally, I lean on him for every 5 days, go out and be the best pitcher in the American League, which is what he's been.
Yeah, something else he said, quote, "I'm processing information at a much higher level than I ever have in my career," end quote. You know, what about that, AJ, this ability to process information, the mental side of things? Is that something you can teach other players, or is that something a player has and has to develop on his own?
Yeah, a little bit of both. I mean, I think you can try to explain it, but for the most part, I think what JV's alluding to is he's maturing still, and he's still learning. And a lot of people think these guys can show up at the field. We expect Jose Altuve, oh, he's going to roll out two or three hits. He's constantly trying to get better. JV the same way. He's had to go from dominant fastball pitcher to kind of a little bit of rock bottom a couple of years ago where he was struggling to get through five, six innings to now being elite and dominating with a mixture of his pitches and still having 97 in his tank. So I think as he's matured and as he's learning the game, it's no different than you've done it in your life, I'm sure, in broadcasting. I do it in playing and managing. You know, you look back and go, dang, I wish I would have known that then. I would have been a better version of myself. And instead, I've just had to go through a few things in order to learn more about the game. And the one lesson I think everybody can learn from Justin Verlander about baseball is that you have to keep evolving, you have to keep learning, you have to keep challenging yourself if you want to be a dude. If you want to just have a good career, you can do the same thing over and over again, and your talent will probably get you through. If you want to be a guy, you want to be a true kind of Renaissance man, so to speak, across the generations of baseball that you play, got to evolve with the times, and he's doing that.
Hey, I love what you just said, that if you want to be a dude, you've got to do all these things if you want to be a dude. We talk about that a lot, even in horse racing. Me and the guys get together, and if we see a horse that we love, that we have, we're like, man, he's a dude. Even from an equine standpoint, can you explain what you mean by that, that if you want to be a dude, when you're talking about a dude, what are you talking about?
I'm just talking about the guy. You walk into the stadium, and when it's his day to pitch, you have your guys that are out there going, we are going to do everything possible to win. And you have your opponent that's going, we better lock in with this guy because, you know, we have a chance, but we only have a small chance. And that's the it factor that we talk about in athletes. When you go into to play LeBron, when you go into play Brady, when you go into to if you're going to lock horns in golf with Spieth or one of the guys, you better lock in like 100% of your attention on that guy. And that's a dude to me. When Justin Verlander's pitching and it's tomorrow, the Rays and us will both be locked in because of his presence. And that's earned over time, and it's earned over performance, and it's what guys should strive for to be in this game.
AJ Hinch joins us for a few more moments. Let me ask you about this. Recently, there's been a lot of talk about defensive shifts and maybe making them illegal. I mean, when you look at the game right now, AJ, is there a problem with defensive shifts, or is it the fact that the guys are struggling to beat them? Is that the problem?
Yeah, I think it's a problem with offensive approach. I mean, it's, you know, I think you, again, like talking about evolving in the game, I mean, it's, I understand where the defenses are, but the defenses are only positioned in places that where they think you're going to hit it. If you can develop the skills to hit the ball all over the place, then we can't play five or six or seven guys on the right side of second base. We have to honor all aspects. I mean, it's, you know, again, in football terms, if you can't throw the ball, we're going to stack the line. If you can't run the ball, we're going to put everybody deep and defend the pass. I mean, it's no different in our sport. So I think the problem is that the hitters have to make an adjustment and try to beat the game as opposed to complain about the shift. I think in hitting is not supposed to be a layup drill. It's not supposed to be something that's really easy. It's not, you know, we don't want to just put everybody equally positioned around so that we have all these holes in the field where the game can be easily played. So I say just lock in with trying to beat the game as opposed to worrying about where I put some. If I put six outfielders out there, then you do have a bunt. You do have a ground ball to the left side or right side, depending on where the opening is. Figure it out.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it seems to me, is this too simplistic? It seems to me it'd be like banning a pitcher from throwing breaking balls to a guy who you know can't hit breaking balls.
Well, I'd still be playing if they would do that, Jim. I could hit a fastball. If I could have gotten to ban that would have been a much better career for me.
That's great. AJ Hinch is the manager of the Astros. He led them to their first World Series, but that was last season. They are playing great baseball right now, and they're coming off an amazing road trip. AJ, I appreciate you so much. Great to have you back. Thank you very much, and always great to have you on this show.
Yeah, great coming on anytime.
You got it, AJ. Thank you. Can't have him enough. AJ Hinch joining us. They're 48-25. They're in first in the AL West, and Tampa is at Houston tonight. So many good things out of that conversation. But as far as the shifts, I mean, seriously, I couldn't agree with him more. That to me is like going to a pitcher and saying, nah, that guy can't hit a breaking ball, so you can't throw a breaking ball anymore. If you don't like the shift, stop hitting it where they know you're going to hit it. That's why they've got the guys out there. That's why they've moved and shifted to that position, because they know you can't adjust. All right, so we start the third hour with a wide open segment. In fact, the third hour itself is wide open. 1-800-636-8686. The interviews are done. We go open phones next hour. You're in the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. Telephone number is toll free. Hit me up. Third hour straight ahead.